Playing Nirvana.
The Cobain 50.
Nirvana.
Kurt Cobain's top 50 albums.
Nirvana.
From listener powered KEXP.
This is the Cobain 50 from listener powered KEXP. I'm Martin Douglas.
And I'm Dusty Henry. This week, Janice Headley digs into the Raincoats' self-titled debut album, which dropped in 1979.
This is a big one because I feel as though Janice is an indie pop scholar to the highest degree. And on this episode, she talks to Jen Pelly, who literally wrote the book on the Raincoats, the 33 and a third book on the Raincoats.
Yeah, this is like a indie pop scholar meeting of the minds talking about one of the greatest like art rock records ever.
I would say top 10 easy. The Raincoats is solidly on that list. No matter how many times that list changes, the self-titled debut from the Raincoats is always on there.
Well, without further ado, let's get into it then. This is Janice Headley on the Raincoat self-titled debut from 1979.
Last week on the Cobain 50, my coworker Martin Douglas talked about the 70s all-female post-punk band The Slits and about the influence they ignited that still carries on today. This week, we're spotlighting one of those very bands who formed because of them. After London art school students Anna De Silva and Gina Birch saw The Slits in concert, they went on to form their own all-female post-punk band, who also landed themselves on Kurt Cobain's list of 50 favorite albums. They're called The Raincoats. Anna and Gina formed the Raincoats in 1977. After a few lineup shuffles, they added former Slits drummer Palmolive to the group, along with classically trained violinist Vicky Aspinall. They made their live debut in London in January 1979, catching the attention of Rough Trade Records, who released their self-titled debut album later that very year. That album went on to inspire entire generations of musicians. The Raincoats imbued their art school sensibilities into their songs, combining unconventional instrumentation with a cacophony of vocal interplay. The band embraced a DIY approach to their music that prioritized passion over perfection. As co-founder Gina Birch explained to KEXP last year,
"We weren't trying to be perfect. We were trying to be creative. And in a way, that creativity was on view. So you could see how it was put together, maybe. I don't know how to explain it, but it wasn't perfection. It left room for the viewer to kind of be in there too somehow."
This definition of punk is what fueled the 90s Riot Grrrl movement, a scene defined not by its musicianship, but by feminism, inclusion, and enthusiasm. For the bands coming out of Olympia, Washington at the time, and for many of the bands on Kurt's list, the ability to play an instrument was hardly a precursor to starting a band. We spoke to writer Jen Pelly, author of the 33 and a third series book on the Raincoats, about how the band's so-called imperfections made them all the more inspiring.
I feel like the Raincoats and Nirvana's extent too, like the elements of the music are pretty minimal, but the music is so complicated in ways that are not conventional. This all makes me think of, I really love that movie, 20th Century Women, where there's a scene where Greta Gerwig's character is sort of monologuing about the Raincoats.
"Can't things just be pretty?"
In this scene, a mother, played by actress Annette Bening, asks her son and their housemate, played by Gerwig, what record they're listening to.
"Okay, so they're not very good, and they know that, right?"
"Yeah. It's It's like they've got all this feeling and they don't have any skill and they don't want skill because it's really interesting what happens when your passion is bigger than the tools you have to deal with it. It creates this energy that's raw. Isn't it great?
Fun fact, in this scene, they're actually holding a copy of the single given to them by the band. But back to Jen.
And I feel like that sort of like gets at this idea of, you know, just prizing passion over technique and seeing imperfections as virtues rather than as flaws. It all just makes the music feel like it's more alive or something.
In the summer of 1990, Kurt had begun dating Toby Vail, who would become the drummer for Bikini Kill later that year. Toby was the one who wore the Teen Spirit brand of deodorant that later inspired a certain famous song title. Anyway, as Jen tells us, it's inevitable that Kurt would have discovered the Raincoats through Toby, or just through living in Olympia at the time at all.
My understanding has always been that the Raincoats were sort of like in the air in Olympia. And if you lived in Olympia, pretty much everyone knew who the Raincoats were. I also remember speaking with Kathy Wilcox from Bikini Kill and her telling me, like, you know, you could pretty obviously trace this back to Kurt's relationship with Toby. And I believe that to be true for sure. I think that it seems like if you lived in Olympia, eventually you were going to find out who the Raincoats were. And that has to do also with, I think, the legacy of a radio station like Chaos, the radio station in Olympia. The Raincoats record would have been out of print in the 80s and 90s. I mean, it was never released in the US until the mid-90s. So basically impossible to find unless someone would dub you a tape of it or something. So the fact that the Olympia radio station even had these records to begin with was, you know, pretty big deal, I would imagine.
Like the Vaseline's, who we covered last month on the Cobain 50 podcast, the Raincoats were championed in the States by local icon Calvin Johnson, frontman for the band Beat Happening and founder of K Records. He was also a DJ for Olympia's community radio station, Chaos, where he played many of the bands who appear on Kurt's list.
Listening to KAOS 89.3 Olympia on the left side of your FM dial.
Also like the Vaseline's, the Raincoats had been broken up for some time before Kurt discovered them. They released their third LP, titled Moving, in 1984. The title ended up being a little ironic, as the band members found themselves moving on to new projects shortly after its release. Gina was focusing on film. Anna was working at an antique store. In 1992, Kurt arrived in London with his then-girlfriend Courtney Love, hoping to find a copy of the Raincoats' 1979 debut album. As Gina told us, she and Anna had never heard Nirvana before.
Him and Courtney went into the Rough Trade shop in West London. And no, they didn't. You know, it was all out of print. No one had a blooming copy of it. And Judy, who was part of the shop, she said, oh, Anna is working in the shop just round the corner. Why don't you go and see if she's got a copy? So they went up the road to where Anna was working and walked in, and she didn't know who they were. And they weren't there very long because Anna actually strangely had the one customer in. She'd only get one, maybe no customers every day. But they were there for a short while. But after that, you know, Judy rang and said, did they come?
Yes.
And then we all listened to Nirvana and we were like, blimey, they're great, you know, they're brilliant.
Kurt wrote about this expedition in detail in the liner notes for Nirvana's 1992 compilation album, Incesticide. The very next year, Kurt was instrumental in getting the Raincoats' three studio albums reissued and released in the U.S. for the very first time. He even invited them to open for Nirvana. But sadly, the tour never happened, as Kurt died by suicide in 1994. It's not overt, but you can hear the Raincoats' influence in Nirvana's music. The opening chords of Nirvana's Come As You Are.
Mm-hmm.
share a similarity to the Raincoats track, Adventures Close to Home. Jen Pelly shared some of the similarities that struck her as well.
When I listen to a song like the Nirvana song Aneurysm, it gives me such a similar feeling to In Love, for instance. They are both these visceral, like, exorcisms of emotion. And I feel like there's something about both of them that is so guttural and, like, just reaches inside of me in a way that other music doesn't. Look at a song like The Void, for instance. Like, the anguish of something like The Void is so akin to what Kurt was communicating every time he performed.
Nirvana would cover the Raincoats song The Void live, but his wife Courtney Love took it to the studio, covering the track for the B-side to Hole's 1994 single, Doll Parts.
And then also, I think of, just to draw one other direct comparison, a song like Polly, for instance. Isn't me, have a seed, let me clip dirty wings. I think there is such a clear precedent with the Raincoats song Off Duty Trip. Just a couple in the pond, counting out those games in the dark. Those are all... They were both songs that were responding very specifically to news stories of women who were raped. And I think that Raincoat song in particular is so groundbreaking in being a punk song that was so directly dealing with the sort of subject matter and giving voice to a story in which a man committed a horrific abuse of power and was not held accountable. I have to imagine that had some impact on Kurt. I don't know how much he knew about the context of the song, but I think just listening to the song, you can tell what it's about.
Kurt was an unabashed, in-your-face feminist. He wore dresses on stage and in magazine photo shoots. In 1991, he wore a fancy yellow ball gown on MTV as a guest on their weekly heavy metal show, Headbangers Ball.
It's Headbangers Ball, so I thought I'd wear a gown.
Dress for the ball. There you go.
And it shows he would regularly stop performances to defend women who were being harassed in the audience.
If I see one more person grope a girl in the breast or the ass or anywhere else, you're just going to hear about 2 hours of feedback, then just leave, okay?
It's no wonder Kurt was drawn to a band like the Raincoats, who were one of the first bands to declare themselves feminists during an era when feminism was considered a dirty word. By the 90s, Kurt was helping to flip the script on that narrative. Throughout the 80s, most of the hair metal bands topping the charts featured scantily clad women writhing on sports cars. But as writer Amanda Marcotte pointed out in the Daily Beast, quote, "The first human faces you see in the video for Smells Like Teen Spirit belong not to the band members, but to a group of heavily tattooed women dressed like anarchist cheerleaders," end quote. Jen Pelly noted how Kurt's anarchistic spirit helped introduce bands like the Raincoats to the masses.
Something that I think a lot about, like when I think about Kurt Cobain kind of like uplifting like tiny obscure bands that he was obsessed with, is this sort of like anarchic spirit at the heart of Nirvana. To me, like anarchy at best is like when you disperse your own power, and how that's really what he was doing, was like dispersing his own power by kind of diffusing the spotlight onto all of these like punk bands that he was obsessed with. And I'm grateful to him for that.
We are too.
That was Janice Headley speaking with Jen Pelly about the Raincoat self-titled debut from 1979. And before I get into how much I love this record, Dusty, what were your initial thoughts of listening to the Raincoats? And when did you discover them?
I want to say it must have been like early 20s or something like that, which feels like a pretty appropriate time to get into the Raincoats. Definitely inspired from this list. This was one of the records on the list that I feel like warped my mind when I listened to it. But I think it was an awakening sort of record of, I don't know, I was kind of coming out of like, you know, of course Nirvana, but like a lot of more like palatable mainstreamy rock sort of things. And then hearing this record was like finding out there's a completely different way of doing things, which is a huge compliment. I will say I didn't quite get it at first. I was like, what is this? What am I listening to? This is weird. but there was enough there like, I need to go back and listen just more. And yeah, it's so unlike anything else. It's so mysterious. I want to know what you think. I'm dying to hear your thoughts.
I will say that I had a similar discovery of getting into more challenging music and not so much mainstreamy or even, you know, more pop oriented stuff. I read Kurt's list, you know, back when those journals first came out. We mentioned that, how I, you know, went to the Tower Records that is now the garage where I park my Jeep to come into the office, and read these journals and saw the Raincoats. And, you know, like I saw it and didn't really, you know, it was the very first years of file sharing. So it took me a couple years to actually explore some of the names on that list. But at the same time as I was discovering another great art rock band who had a violist in the Velvet Underground, mm-hmm. I discovered the Raincoats. And for someone who was getting into the more artistic properties of music and less so, you know, mainstream pop oriented stuff, those two albums together blew my mind and really influenced the direction of a lot of the music I listen to today, especially the artier stuff. Like I like music with heavy drones and with unconventional instrumentation. And I think this album by the Raincoats, it's the ground floor of what people who want to get into more avant-garde textures as a songwriting element for pop and rock music should be getting into.
That's a really good point. It's like a gateway album. It's because we're talking about it like it's, you know, it is experimental, but there are melodies there.
There's absolutely.
Yeah, there's like song structure that feels familiar, but the aesthetic of it and the approach of it. I mean, just like on the last record, on the Slits record, we talked about that cover of Heart of the Grapevine. There's a cover of The Kinks' Lola on mm-hmm. here. And it's like Lola, like deconstructed, you know, it's like a lot more rickety and like a really cool way. Like it's, so you're like, okay, I know this. I know the song. I've heard the song a million times, but like not in the way it's played like this. It's like it's coming out from the basement floor, you know, through the creaks of the wood panels and everything.
I won't say it's a complete reinvention of the original Lola, but I think it's enough of a reinvention to really open your mind as to the possibilities of music. And like you're saying, you know, this is a pop record, right? Regardless of the screechy violin or the sort of threadbare looseness of it. And I think that if you go into the history of artists who consider themselves experimental, I think a lot of them would say that they're making pop music.
Yeah, absolutely. And like pop music presents itself as pristine or fun, but there's a lot of darkness to be had in pop. And I feel like this record really like touches into that ominous spirit. I was listening to this record the other day. I went to Costco on a Saturday, which is already bad in itself. And I was listening to The Void, that song, and there's like these like screeching violins or violas and just like this, I am in the dark heart of humankind right now. But it's also cool. And like, I don't know where I'm going with that other than don't go to Costco on a Saturday.
I mean, I would say that when you're speaking of darkness, when you're speaking of The Void, there's no more perfect place to be than Costco on a Saturday yeah. afternoon.
It was hailing too. Like it was one of the circles in hell on the Bleach cover.
Yeah. And this is another record that was very big in that seminal, epical late 80s, early 90s Olympia rock scene. I mean, this was another band that the original Riot Girl movement members were listening to and put on to Kurt, who became essentially one of their biggest fans and arguably their biggest advocate.
Oh, yeah. If you had told me this was a K Records release, I would just believe you. Like, it's so, even down to the cover and the aesthetic, it's just the template for an entire scene of music.
Yeah, I think even though the subject matter of the songs aren't quite as explicitly feminist, like, there is a strong sense of feminism at the core. I mean, even in terms of, you know, having like a artsy avant pop sensibility and the fact that all women in this band.
Definitely.
And with that said, let's wrap this episode up. This piece was produced by Janice Headley and mixed by Roddy Nickpour. Our podcast manager is Isabel Khalili, and Larry Mizell Jr. is our director of editorial. And I'm Martin Douglas.
And I'm Dusty Henry. We'll see you next week on the Cobain 50 from listener-powered KEXP, where the music matters. I truly wanted to die. I circled the parking lot for like 30 minutes. I saw people crash into each other.
Oh man. This is the one on a 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. I've never been inside that Costco. The one in Shoreline is not quite as bad, but it's still pretty bad.
Yeah, it was a foolish choice to go.